96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, Bahamas. It is Wednesday, the 28th of April, 2021, and I am so pleased to be with you on the air. My name is Erin Green. You tuned into 96.9 FM, and you're on the clock. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Today's show is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. If you want to tune in to the show, but not on your radio, remember we're streaming live audio and video on guardiantalkradio.com. You can listen in on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 969, and Flow, channel 612. Or you can download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices and listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. Or you could text us on the Guardian Radio text line. That's 422-GR96. It's 422-4796. And that's powered by BTC. Standard text rates apply. You can also call us at 323-6232. 325-4316 or 325-4259. Thank you for joining the show this morning. I have a message for you from the Bahamas Customs Department. Exempt, making customs simple. Bahamas Customs Baggage Declaration app is coming soon. Fill out customs forms while traveling. Search for rates of duty. Calculate duty before you land, and so much more. This app is easy to use and helps you clear customs even faster. This was brought to you by Bahamas Customs Department. Well, good morning, Bahamas. I haven't turned on my live feed yet. Can't wait for my little technical assistance. Young human rights advocate gets back to the studio to join me. Unfortunately, he was in a traffic accident a couple of weeks ago, and he has to tend to getting his car in order before he could brave the streets of Nassau. And I don't blame him, because you got to be brave to drive on the streets of Nassau. You see, you shouldn't have to be brave, right? You should be able to rely on the fact that every other road user is aware of their obligations on the road and the traffic controls they're required to follow. B, not only they're aware, but they make a commitment to following them. But I tell you what, many of you are not serious at all about this life. It's one thing to see you driving with your cell phone in your hand on a dry, sunny day. It's another thing to see you watching a movie on your cell phone as you drive through the rain and the slick roads of Nassau City. And here's another thing. If you on the road in your car cutting a movie, why are you upset that I trying to put you on camera? You behaving like a movie star? You pulling stunts in the road? It's obvious you want people to see you. So why would you get upset when somebody puts you on camera, right? And why would you cut a movie in your employer's vehicle? Is your employer paying you to be in that movie? Do you understand the implications of your actions, the possible consequences of your actions? Why would you get upset if you cut in a movie in your company vehicle and somebody wants to call the company to say thank you for the entertainment? Y'all really, really sometimes just make me wonder. Also, I just wanted to share this note. You can't create a coconut water industry thiefing other people's coconuts. Dear young Bahamian men and women attempting to make something work by selling coconuts. First of all, stop thiefing people's coconuts out the yard. You're going to get very upset when people come out of their homes with weapons to engage you about theft of their property. Y'all gonna get very upset and y'all gonna wonder why these people have to be so mean, why they have to fire their shotgun at you and you only thiefing coconuts. It's about a violation. It's a violation of their privacy. It's a violation of their property. It's a violation of their security. What makes you think that you could just pick up yourself and walk onto their things and do what you want? You don't tolerate other people doing it to you. You certainly don't. Why do you think people should tolerate you doing it? I saw a lovely video of two young men sneaking into the people's yard, thiefing the dwarf coconuts. I know they'd have been dead upset if somebody come out there with a cutlass. Their mamas would have been dead upset. It's not, see, what y'all don't realize, it's not about the coconut. It's about the disrespect, the disregard for boundaries, right? The lack of spatial awareness. And then imagine if it is a woman's home property that you sneaking on, violating her security. Now you say, I only come to thief the coconuts. What about the other person who's watching you and decides, I can take it a bit further because this house seems unsecured? Think about it, man. Do people want to see young men suffering, not able to access the economy? Of course they don't. Of course they don't. But if you ever drove past Village Road, past the spot where the young men were selling coconuts there, those young men never removed their presence from that spot. It's a blight. It's an eyesore. It's obvious that that was where they were selling the coconuts. And they barely did anything about it. People will work with you if you work in and not just faffing about. There's a rule for procuring fruit. See, I ain't really upset at you for taking fruit because we also have a fruit management problem in this town. And it could be very, very frustrating watching people allow fruit to just fall and linger on the ground and rot on the ground. It's frustrating because it also creates a health and safety and environmental health issue, right? By encouraging rats and other vermin. But when you're hungry and you're seeing all that fruit fall on the ground and rot, that could upset you. But there's still a rule. If you go into somebody's yard or into their tree without their permission to pick their fruit because you know it has value and you could make money from it, regardless of how they treat their yard or the fruit in their yard, if you have the audacity to break the law and the social contract and go in their yard and take the fruit, dear African, dear Bahamian, dear European in the descendant in the Bahamas, all of us supposed to know, if you're going to do that, you pick and leave 3/4 for the homeowner and you take 1/4 for yourself. That's what the rule is. You don't go in people's yard and thief all the things and don't give them an opportunity to eat it. People will typically share with you if you ask. Unless, like me, I make money from the mangoes that grow in the trees in my yard. That's how I was surviving, right? But I had enough mangoes on the tree to know it's enough for people to come and pass by and pick up one or two, not a problem. But I made money from that. That's how I survive. But there is a coconut industry out there waiting for us. There are so many coconuts on this island right now. We could be well on our way to a coconut industry by taking stock of what exists already and how other people could access it. See, this thing, but it being in the diaspora, in a post-colonial, neo-colonial world, we so stuck in the counterculture. We so stuck in the belief that we are not real, we are not right. It's never our time. That we stay looking for hookups and cheats and how to get around. Forgetting that we are in charge of ourselves. And anything that needs to be fixed, we can fix it legitimately. Because it's ours to fix. It's no longer the masters who don't want to hear us, who don't want to feed us, who don't want to bathe us, who don't want to make sure we have medicine. It ain't that no more. These are simple things that we could change ourselves. There's a whole coconut industry waiting out there, but we'll never realize it if we stuck on teething coconut from vulnerable woman dem yard. Big man, y'all catch yourself. Be the man that Bahamians expect you to be. Tired of this counterculture foolishness. Tired of this Scarface culture foolishness. You in charge of yourself and you in charge of your own country. And the first step is for us to learn how to govern ourselves. So like I say to them young men, them big back crusty men jumping in people's yard, teeth and coconuts. Stop. Please. Anyway, that's what I had to say this morning. The rain caused that. The rain caused it, and you can't be mad at the rain, and you can't be mad at me. So, I hope we're having a good day, Bahamas. I see I got a caller on the line, Kermit. Caller, you're on the clock.
Good morning, Eric.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm listening to you intensely. I would just like to say I'm the owner of the property on Village Road where I allowed the young men to sell their products.
Yes, sir.
I had no problems at all with that. My only prerequisite was that they cleaned up and got rid of the debris.
Yes.
That is why they're not there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So you know, we give people opportunities and chances, and the property is vacant, so all I said to them, throw your garbage 10 foot in when it's out of sight, and I'll be happy.
Mm-hmm.
As simple as that one request is, they couldn't comply.
Yep. Thank you so much for calling. And thank you for giving them the opportunity, right? And you know, I would say as a human rights advocate, don't stop giving people opportunities. Be stricter and firmer on your boundaries. And it's up to advocates like myself and people in the public domain to engage these young people and talk to them about systems and why they have to figure out how systems work, how to create systems, and how to manage systems sustainably. Because obviously they had a wonderful opportunity that they messed up on their own. Thank you so much, sir.
It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And so to other young people, the opportunities are out there. And yes, you are maybe frustrated with the way that things work in right now. But be open to the systems that you are operating in. Understand them. Understand why they have the rules that they have. And then you understand how you can operate without breaking the rules and without negatively impacting people in your space. It's quickly, I got another call on the line. Kermit, morning, you're on the clock.
Hey, morning, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How you do?
Talk much but the canap.
Well, listen, I didn't want to talk much about the Gnat, but you see the wind and the rain, we losing plenty Gnat blossom. I was waiting for the Gnat to get a little more solid to start talking about the Gnat. In fact, I was about to tell you it's onion season.
On his own, onion.
Boy, look here. You know Gnat could compete with onion, right?
There you go. That's my point I was about to make. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Gnat is basically the number one seller.
Well, yes. Gnat and tamarind be selling between $12 and, like, you know, $13, $14 a pound on the road. So you're right. But the beautiful thing about Gnat we don't understand is this. And tamarind, when you got a lime shortage, right? Season your fish with sour Gnat and sour tamarind.
Well, tell me something. Yeah, when you think about it, those sour Gnats, but how would you season it?
So you're gonna peel the, you're gonna shell the Gnat and you're gonna sit it in water. I'd possibly boil the water and then let it start cooling down, right?
Right.
And put the Gnat in the water, mash it up a little bit, but you don't really want to muddle it, right? Like a mojito. You don't want to go that far. You let it sit in there.
But you're only trying to get that skin thing off. You don't want to see it to get, because that's kind of bitter. You don't want to see it in there.
Right. So you want to, as the water is cooling down, you want to drop your Gnat seed in the water and let it sort of leach out the Gnat juice.
Right.
Right? And then you could get a little cheesecloth and squeeze it. And I'd call that the fresh pop flavor.
You want to squeeze it. Like put a certain amount in the cloth.
Yeah. But you don't want to cook it too long. Because you want a fresh pop flavor. And you're going to squeeze that and you're going to capture that juice. And then when it's time to season your fish, you're going to sit your fish in the juice.
Very good. The main reason I call is this. With this government new thing about putting the fruit in a certain area. Okay. Doctor started to tell a lot of people that drinking the coconut water is good for cancer. I don't know how true it is, but I understand a lot of people who had seen the doctor for cancer told me that. But be that as me, as a coconut lover myself, and especially sweet coconut water. If a young man just opened a coconut venue in my area, mm-hmm. and I started to patronize his business, and then right after that, the government said they were moving everybody. Now let me ask you a question, Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
If I want some coconut water now, as you speak about all these fruits, I have to go all the way. If I live east. If this government place where they want everybody to go is west, I have to go all the way west to get myself a behemoth, some behemoth coconut water.
Ah, boy, look here. That's the point. The whole point of it is that you want the water fresh, as close to you as possible, right?
Right.
Here's what the problem is. When we don't govern ourselves, we leave it to the government to govern us, right? That's part of the problem. When we don't govern ourselves, when we don't figure out how to create our own system where all of us could work together, we leave it to the government to create its own system. I feel you. That's sort of problematic. To build a culture of appreciation for coconut water or coconut water industry, the point is to create convenience and ease.
Right.
You want it to be easy for people to pick up a glass of coconut water and easier than any other thing, right? Except for regular water.
Think about this. When you speak about opening the economy, that means you look like you exclude like food. That particular type of food is under grade.
Well, I think what it shows us is that the people who are responsible for the economy don't understand the impact of local produce on the GDP and the economy.
That's the point I'm making.
Because they don't live it. You gotta live it, right?
That's the point.
Thank you, sir. That's a good point that you made.
Have a good one.
Yeah, man. Thank you. They got to live it, which takes me to my next point. My next point, I got to move through very quickly because I got some exciting guests on the line. My next point in today's Tribune, there is an article featuring comments from the Labor Director, John Pinder. I am very, very concerned about this. See, I'm concerned about the whole vaccine rollout plan or lack thereof. I'm concerned because how do we expect people to make reasonable and informed decisions without access to the information necessary? That's the first thing. The second thing is this. I'm a human rights advocate. No matter what my personal position is on an issue, I need to delve into the issue and make sure that everybody's rights are being acknowledged and respected, regardless of whether I agree with them or not. And that's why it's important for me to engage in the vaccine conversation. But here's what my thing is. The labor director does not inspire confidence in me with the statements that he has made. And as an employee, generally, I am concerned. I'm concerned for other employees about the certainty around mandatory vaccinations. See, because the Prime Minister keeps saying, and the Director of Labor keeps saying, there are not any mandatory vaccinations. Now, I'd feel more comfortable if I heard them say, there will never be. Because that's a certainty, right? But if you're telling me right now there's no mandatory vaccinations, why are you telling me that? I already know that, right? I already know that right now there's no legislation making those vaccinations mandatory. And so, Mr. Pinder, I'd like to invite you on my show to clarify the statements. And see, because it says here, Mr. Pinder added that employers could not unilaterally require the vaccine in instances where terms and conditions of employment were already agreed upon. He goes on to say, a new hire, yes, an employer can require the vaccine. But if I already have my terms and conditions laid down in my employment contract, the employer has no right to unilaterally amend my contract. We have to agree. See, this is why I'm so concerned about the lack of clarity on the government's statements regarding the vaccine and whether they're mandatory or not. And not when I say the government, here's what I mean. The competent authority, the Minister of Health, the Director of Labor, and all other state agents. See, because we had earlier in the month statements from Mr. Michael Scott, who is an agent of the state. And every right-thinking person should ask themselves, were these statements made as an agent of the state or as a private sector business person? And even if they were made as a private sector business person, has he imported anything from his work as an agent of the state into this conversation as a private business person? But when I hear, this is a fancy word for it, like, you know, ambivalence or it's two sides of the mouth. When I hear these unclear statements from the Director of Labor, I become concerned. When I see the Director of Labor campaigning in a red FNM shirt, I become even more concerned. Because surely, if the Prime Minister says that the vaccines are not mandatory, why would an employer creating a new contract right now think that he could make the vaccine mandatory for that employment? Why would he do that? Is he trying to jump the gun on the government? And if the government ultimately says, in law, in legislation, there will be no mandatory vaccinations and there will be no forcing employees to take the vaccination for employment, what is the business person going to do then with that wonky contract? I say all of this to say this. People need clarity to make a decision as important as taking a vaccine that has not been approved for anything but emergency use. That's the vibe. That's it. People need access to information. They have a right to that information. No matter how we feel about the decision they make, they have a right to make that decision. There are grand human rights implications involved in this discussion. And I am terribly, terribly concerned that we have not seen substantive contributions from the legal community, giving citizens a scope, a sense of the law, a framework to use to have these discussions, to form their own opinions. And make me wonder, what are all of these fancy people getting paid for on this plantation, man? What are y'all getting paid for? We really would like to know. Because this is perhaps the most important human rights discussion we have yet to embark upon. as simple as that. Oh, and let me remind you, I was very concerned to see the director of labor in Red FNM shade, upon the road, with the rumors being that they're campaigning for a seat for himself. This don't make any sense. This is very problematic. It's also very problematic, juxtaposed, right? Two statements from the FNM government responding to the University of the Bahamas' debate committee on why they don't want to participate in the debate. What was most striking to me was the response that this debate series don't really fit the Westminster model. I was sitting here thinking to myself, what in this country is fitting the Westminster model right now? Where all out of the blue this grand respect for the Westminster model come from? You'll get to... No. I'm the one that's joking. I tell jokes for a living. I don't get paid to do it because the Bahamas. But y'all need to remember that I'm the one that gets paid to tell the jokes. Not y'all. Not y'all at all. Because if you really had respect for the Westminster system, would the director of labor be wearing a red FNM shirt moving around the town? Would individuals who made threats against civil servants be appointed to positions like registrars of things? Anyway, that's a good segue, right? Because today on my show, I have two members of the University of the Bahamas' debate series committee. And we are going to engage or continue the discussion about the debate series. But because Dr. Chris Curry and Dr. Nyambi Hall Campbell Dean are members of the university's staff, I can't really delve, well, let me rephrase that. I'd like to be very respectful of the position they hold at the university and attempt to engage in a level of discourse where we can engage critically, but also understanding the sensitive nature of the discussion because they are representing the entire institution. So that's why I took a little time to run on with some of those political points because I want to be very careful. I want to delve into these issues, but I want to do it in a way that respects both the institution, the University of the Bahamas, its representatives, and the offices in the government that we're talking about. Anyway, good morning. Dr. Campbell Hall Campbell Dean and Dr. Curry, how are you?
Good morning.
Morning, I'm good.
We're good.
Good. I'm glad to have you guys here. Like I said just now, I want to have a conversation to delve into the issues, but I want to sort of frame it with everyone, the callers, the texters, and to remind myself that we're speaking to representatives of the university, and so that the position that they bring has to be balanced, and it has to be nonpartisan, right? And it has to... We gotta up the level of discourse a little bit. So, first question I want to ask you is, how many political debates has the institution from COB to UB organized so far?
Well, that's a good question, Aaron. We have had actually a number of political debates spanning over 20 years. I was on study leave from 2006 to 2010, but I know that there were debates and town hall meetings as such related to political issues while I was away. I will tell you that in 2017, we had official debates, town hall debates, and we had the participation of the two legacy parties along with other parties, and we used almost the identical format that we're currently using with a thematic focus for each debate. So I'll leave that on the floor right there.
Absolutely. So let's get right into it, right? Why not participate in this debate? Like, what are the reasons why the FNM, you think, would not participate in the debate?
Well, the reasons they gave was primarily they felt there was an issue with the structure or format, and they alluded to two examples. They thought these examples coming from territories or jurisdictions that have the Westminster model, Jamaica and Canada, and they cited certain criteria based on those two jurisdictions. But as I've been saying in our statement that we gave, and it was really an organic statement, all of the committee members put together and contributed to the statement that was released Monday afternoon. And the point that we made was Canada is a poor example to choose from. The Westminster system is very fluid. And in the case of Canada, they have four or five parties that are elected to their federal House of Assembly, which is located in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. But they also have a number of parties, some carrying the same name as the federal party, that have a provincial legislature in each of their provinces. And so they have an overlapping system of governance because of the size of their country. And then they even have mayoral systems as well in their cities. So their Westminster system is a huge departure from our own. So to call statistics and rules from a country that has a very different model of the Westminster and apply it to what we should be doing, to me, seems egregious. And then Jamaica is another bad example, in my opinion, because it's the largest Anglophone territory in the Caribbean. It has a demographics that's much different from ours, with over 2 to 5 million citizens voting. And it has a longer history of political maturation, gaining independence a decade plus before us in 1961, mm-hmm. and establishing an independent debates commission long before we haven't even had one yet. So they have a different system, and we shouldn't be comparing ourselves to those two countries simply because we have come out of the same colonial context and in terms of the Westminster system.
Absolutely. But they can't compare themselves to Jamaica. Jamaica parties have their own theme music. Like, they have their own party song. And they're not just covering great American hits. They had Jamaicans write their own party song, right? Like, mm-hmm. I just find it sort of ridiculous, these comparisons. And in particular, this desire to hold to the Westminster system when you have an office of a deputy prime minister. Mm-hmm. There's no mention of Dr. Hall Campbell-Dean.
Oh, yeah. So I just wanted to add to that to say that, you know, as a committee, we don't want to give the impression that we're not open to critique. Mm-hmm. You know, we understand that this is a process in building a democracy that requires feedback and requires participation. And so we have been open to the feedback that other parties have sent, mm-hmm. Because there was feedback, right? There, everybody was not just fully on board with the structure that we set up originally. And so when we send out our proposals, people said what they liked or what they didn't like or what they would like to adjust, and we were open to that. And so we just wanna always keep in mind that we're open to in this process and hope that feedback is given, but also given with a chance for us to incorporate it and change it before people decide that they just don't want to be a part of it.
Absolutely. I am. One of the things I thought about is the FNM's quote unquote suggestions, right? Are they viable for this general election? You know, for instance, this idea that you have to have had a seat in the last election or commanded a certain percentage of votes, right? Are those criteria fair, you know, initially to other parties? But more importantly, are they fair to the Bahamian people? And let me say, maybe that's a loaded question, right? Because as far as I'm concerned, limiting the number of people who could parties and candidates who could participate seems to me like You trying to create the best environment for your particular political party. And the critique that there should be more parties could also be read as an attempt to, or a focus or prioritization of parties in the process. And it leads me to ask the question, are we prioritizing the Bahamian citizen and the Bahamian voter in this process?
Right. I will say this. When we first put up our initial structure and there was feedback on Facebook from the Bahamian public, I know that Chris personally read through over 300 comments of how the Bahamians felt this debate should be structured. And so we noted that and we took that into account. And a big part of that was a request that more parties be added and that the structure be open so that as many people that wanted to participate in the debates had that opportunity to do so. So our goal is to have the discussion that allows for the broadest array of the Bahamian public to feel like they are a part of this democracy building.
Yeah.
If I could just, Naomi has made some strong points. I really love what she said. I would only add that on top of us striving to be democratic in our process and our thinking about the formatting of the debate and understanding that we have a different political environment than other countries, I would add that we do have some parties that have contested a general election 2-3 four times over. Now, did they get 1%, 2-5%? In some instances, they did. But in other instances, these are new parties that are just contesting for the first time. And so we don't have polling data yet on the percentage of how many people would intend to vote for them. So we're in a situation where at least two or three of the parties are new. And then the other parties have, in fact, had some mileage in the past. I would just cite as one example, in 2012, the DNA polled 12,000 persons, right? And while they didn't win a seat in the House of Assembly in 2012, they did pull a sizable voter population from the two legacy parties. And some analysts would even tell you that the reason why the FNM lost was because the 12,000 went away from the FNM. We don't have any scientific data to actually demonstrate that, but that is what a lot of people were feeling after 2012. So my whole point in this is, on the first point, we definitely are looking at a fairer and more equitable and egalitarian debate system. And I think, you know, some of the things that the FNM suggested are absolutely worth looking at as well. For example, the idea of including more persons from different sectors of the society to inform our decision making. We could take that.
Pause there.
We want to have moving forward. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, and very professionally, you could take that. Me on the other side, with my petty self, is saying this is certainly not the party of full consultation telling y'all that they demand a process with fuller consultation.
Well, yeah,
but that's just me being petty.
I hear you. I'm just saying I'm guided by the principle of democracy, and I'm a consensus builder by nature. So if the critique is y'all need to have more people into your committee because that would appear to be more inclusive, we've always been inclusive in the process. And Naomi would attest to this, that when we discussed the changes with the parties, we were inclusive. We listened, we reformatted. We used a process and a praxis that was very inclusive. And that's what we live by. So I like that idea, regardless of what it's hinged to on the petty side, as you suggested.
Yeah.
But I would also say, moving forward, we might consider after this four debates, as the election bell is rung, that we might have another series of debates with a different format after listening again to the legacy parties as well as consulting with the other parties. So we are amenable to change with consultation. But we want to do it in a manner that is private and professional. We don't want it to be played out in the public sphere where the market can interfere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I say that's a very good suggestion. And I want to ask the question, how can the public participate in the debate series? But I want to ask a slightly different point, and hopefully some of these potential candidates are listening. Accessibility, right? In terms of language, are we creating an environment where candidates feel comfortable engaging the average Bahamian? Or you think that because it is organized by the premier tertiary institution in the country, that we may be creating an environment that could sort of marginalize or not be as accessible to the people that may need to hear it most?
Well, I think that's a good question and a good point. Accessibility is something that is a top priority for us within these debates. As such, we've been trying to engage as many different persons from different areas, different constitutions or different environments to have a say and have a role. We're also definitely trying to engage our student population so that the students feel that their voice is heard. As such, we're having one of our debates is focused specifically on youth issues. Okay. So we are planning on having these debates streamed live so that people can access them from a variety of different spaces, whether that's TV or online. Mm-hmm. So we're really trying to open it up and show that these debates, as well as the university, is the place for community.
Awesome. I got a caller on the line. Kermit, be ready for that caller? Caller, you're on the clock. Not there yet? Okay, no problem. I think that the connection between community and the project is important. I'm encouraging constituency offices and candidate offices, right, to use parks and public spaces to project the event so that people can be in the park or outdoors, social distance, but still listen to or watch the debate as it's going on. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. And Aaron, if I could add another point to what Niambi said, mm-hmm. while we have scripted questions that our committee has come forward with and has already, for the first debate, shared with the parties that are participating, know that there is also a critical element of the debate that is going to be basically drawn from audience-generated questions. So in other words, these are questions that our focus group that we're going to set up across the Bahamas are going to have opportunities, and live streaming questions are going to be fielded to the moderators, who will then put them to the debaters on the stage. So that is where you are going to definitely get your Bahamian audience participating and asking questions. These aren't questions that are coming from an academic committee. They're coming from the Bahamian people themselves, being filtered through probably a Zoom platform or through Facebook, whatever, live streaming, where the questions will then be determined which ones will be asked by the moderators. But that's one way that we're trying to make it, again, another type of a democratic process and make it exciting, because it means the debaters have to think on their feet. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be prepared for those spontaneous audience-generated questions.
Absolutely. Kermit, I see we got a caller on the line. Caller, you're on the clock. I am sorry, caller. I am sorry. So here's some critique I have for you, right? I am very concerned about the independence and why y'all ain't got no independence in the debate series. But just before we go there, I see I got another caller on the line. Caller, you're on the clock.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I just want to make a comment.
Yes, sir.
I feel like the governments are concerned, especially the FNM government, they're afraid of the fact that because of social media, there's much more at stake in a debate than what Lisa has, because they know there are groups like the DNA and groups like the Coalition of Independence led by Lincoln Bean, the Kingdom Ministry.
Government movement and the Righteous Government movement. Yeah, two separate parties.
And they're acting. They're trying to make people in the Bohemian Republic think that these groups don't exist, when we have already heard these groups, and they don't want to have to challenge the dreams and the visions of the younger people, the new people that Mark Monroe talk about,
yeah,
that they need to confront, and the ideas and ideas that they have, and also the criticism that would be given to both the PLP and the FNM. So they don't really want to debate. What we need to do is establish our debate from the University of the Bahamas without their permission. They don't want to be involved. That's their business. That all the people who vying for election have a debate without the government involved. If they don't want to be involved, because they're not important, because we're not going to vote for them anyway. And they know that.
Well, well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, well. I got another caller on the line. Caller, you're on the clock. Good morning, caller. How are you?
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
The only problem I have, in fact, I have several problems with the FNM response, is their choice of words, in my opinion, sort of belittle the university.
Mm-hmm. I feel you.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's take one more caller, guys, before we respond. Caller, you're on the clock.
Yes, good morning, Aaron. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay, and good morning to your guests, Dr. Curry, Dr. Campbell, I don't know who else is on. But I believe in order to ensure that the FNM doesn't renege on its governmental and leadership responsibility to answer to the Bahamian people by way of a debate, which the Bahamian people are demanding, I believe that the net should be captured or casted wide enough to ensure that they are captured, and we utilize all formats available to ensure that they are afforded the format that they claim they are prepared to participate under, so as to take away their excuse for not participating. We are not going to allow them to play that rat trap mouse with us. And so please, you all as the committee, cast the net wider to ensure that whatever their specifications are, you meet their criteria and you design it in such a way that it does not disadvantage either them or the opposition, if that's the game they want to play, so that we can ensure that they participate. Thank you for the opportunity.
Look here. Thank you, Anton. Okay, guys, one last caller. Caller, you're on the clock. Good morning. One more second. Put down the tamarind. Ah, oh, you're gone. The tamarind must have been sweet. So I wish Anton had called at the beginning of the show. That should have been the question for the show. Should we change the format of the debates to make it impossible for the FNM to not participate, right? Or should we maintain the model or the structure that has already been established? I think that's a great question, but we know what UB's answer is, right?
Well, our answer is, for now, we have four debates, which we determined by negotiating privately with the various parties that did have a few objections and others that were in good faith, ready to join from the beginning. We will always be open to constructive ideas as to how we can make the debate better. And the invitation is still open for the FNM to join us for these four debates. And I will say that when the election bell is rung, or when we get closer to what we know is the general election date, we might decide to formulate another debate or two, looking more seriously at a proposal come from any party, but particularly from the FNM. We are still open to ideas. And I will say, since you had asked it earlier, Aaron, we're definitely looking at having another debate where we could just have independent candidates or some other parties that have been left out, because we only had a certain amount of spots on the stage because of protocol, health considerations. We can't flood our platform or our stage with too many people. So we're definitely open to ideas about independence debating. We're definitely open to the idea of maybe talking to the FNM about what they would want, and then maybe creating another debate or two based on their formula. We're a consultative group, you know. We just would like to do the consultating and the discussing privately, not played out in the public, where we could actually hash out these things and to come up with productive formula.
Well, listen, one of my biggest concerns about the whole dynamic, right, is I'm concerned that the politicians see this as an opportunity or they see in this moment a need to protect political parties, right? To give political their political party the best advantage, right? A need to create a structure that is proper for political parties. And I see this as just a perpetuation of the same old political culture that prioritizes politics over governance, but B, sort of prioritizes the political class over the citizenry, right? And every response from the FNM and even the PLP has suggested that to me. But I want to ask you this question, and I'm not sure if you have the answer, but a little birdie whispered to me that they were told years ago when the party, the FNM party, refused to participate in another series of debates, that it's in the FNM constitution that they don't participate in debates, right?
Well, if that was the case, then I guess they went against their constitution in 2017. They put up Marvin Dames participated, K. Peter Turnquest participated, the current Minister of Environment, Mr. Ferreira, he also participated. I don't think there's anything in their constitution that says that, because otherwise they would not have participated like they did in 2017.
I get you. I got a text here. Good morning, Aaron, and to your guests. I'm in full agreement with political live debates, but let's be real here. The media house that is airing debates has several horses in the race. The texter says, we all know, and I don't know if we all know this or if it is to be known, or if it's true even. We all know that the owners of the station is supporting at least 5 PLP candidates, and who's to say that they will remain transparent? We don't know that, texter. That's not common knowledge. And you gotta be careful how you say these things. I read it out loud and we're gonna couch it. You don't know that. You don't know that at all. Plus, wise businessmen spread their investment and interest widely. Another text. Some politicians don't want to build this democracy. They only wish to continue tricking Bahamians with missteps, sophistry, and the advancement of straw man arguments. I say most politicians don't know how to build this democracy. They don't understand what a democracy is or how it operates, what's necessary to push it forward. And we got to be very clear about that. Let's not ascribe or let's not say that these people are corrupt or, you know, when really it may be a matter of ignorance and not malfeasance. So, guys, we are at the end of the show. I'm going to give you guys the last word before we go. Still there? Dr. Curry and Dr. Hall Campbell-Dean?
Yeah.
I
just would want to say that, you know, at the end of the day, the University of the Bahamas is our primary tertiary institution in the country, and that we want to value the efforts that we make and always engage with our community in ways that help to build our community. And so we hope that persons see these debates as an opportunity to do that and tune in to all 4 of the debates that are going to be scheduled beginning on May 11th with our youth debate.
Thank you very much. Dr. Curry?
Niambi said it all. I think she's captured what I would have said.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for joining us this morning and continuing this important conversation about the political culture and public discourse via political debates. I got one last text to read just before we go. Good morning, Aaron. I have 2 large coconut trees in my yard, but I don't mind giving the coconuts away because, to be honest with you, we really don't use them. What do you suggest I do, or how should I go about getting someone that's seriously interested, respectable, and honest to just take the coconuts and nothing else out or in and around my yard and home? How do you suggest I go about assisting someone to make a dollar? like going down to the Gladstone Road Farmers Market this weekend after I finish my own market at Dongalik, right? But we're going to go to BAIC, talk to the farmers market vendors, and we're going to create a list of coconut vendors, an official list through BAIC and the Ministry of Agriculture, where you could register and be vetted as a coconut vendor, right? And then we will have a list of people who are willing to allow you to come and pick for them or purchase coconuts from them, right? And that's what we got to do. We need a farmers co-op, a coconut farmers co-op, or a coconut vendors co-op to create a structure to push that work forward. But let's think about ideas like that. Thank you very much, Texter. I'm sorry I didn't get to the rest of the text. I wanted to have that conversation about the debate. I know an hour is not enough time to delve into those, all of those issues, but step by step, we're going to take it. I'm Erin Green. You've been on the clock. This is 96.9 FM. It's 11 a.m., and that means Levon Miller and Unleashed is up next. Have a great day, Bahamas.